And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to have a very special guest coming up in a few minutes, Jim Zorn, former NFL head coach. He got into Redskins for two seasons. He's been a quarterback's coach across the NFL landscape, also played quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks with Steve Largent. So his name should ring a bell for many of you out there, and he actually mentor Davis Webb. He was his quarterback coach leading up to the draft. So we're going to get some insight from him as well as a number of topics in the NFL as we delve into some more topics about position competitions as we near the start of some of these offseason workouts as well as training camp. Rookie mini camp will get underway on Friday. The rookies are going to start to report tomorrow. So if you want to weigh in on that, we could certainly tackle that as well. But on the quarterback topic, Paul,
yeah.
Right before we get to Jim Zorn here, Geno Smith spoke to the media the other day and said that he's nearing as close to 100% as possible following that ACL injury.
Yeah, Geno told the writers that he thinks he's going to be ready by the end of July when the Giants go to training camp coming off of that ACL. And, you know, I think to some that's a very optimistic outlook. I know Coach McAdoo has already said they're going to take it very, very slowly with him. And if I'm not mistaken, even hinted that he may start the training camp on the PUP list, you know. And, you know, if you're the Giants, why push it? There's really no sense in doing so. And, hey, when he's ready to go and compete for the backup job. And that's just that simple. But I appreciate Geno's optimism. I mean, I would try to push it along, too, if I could. I just don't know if the doctors would let me.
Well, they have to be cautious under those circumstances. He had the surgery about 6 months ago, and he talked to reporters because last night he was at the United Way of New York City's Gridiron Gala in Midtown Manhattan. So that's where that quote comes from when he was reflecting on what he's looking forward to. But you know, as Paul mentioned, he is eyeing the start of training camp to be ready. His exact quote is, "I'm good 100," end quote, regarding his status. Impressive, though, as I mentioned, because the surgery was 6 months ago. And, you know, he and Josh Johnson are the two other quarterbacks on the roster. I mean, we focus a lot on Davis Webb. The veterans, who in all likelihood are going to be competing for the backup job, Paul, if they keep three quarterbacks.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious by Coach McAdoo's discussions with the media a couple of weeks back, they probably will keep three quarterbacks. And the thinking right now is that Davis Webb would be the number three guy, hold the clipboard, and just learn everything he can from the veterans. And if need be, and one of the guys does have to go in for Eli Manning, the assumption is that it would be one of the veterans who wins the number two job who would go in for Eli. That's not to say Davis Webb couldn't blow the Giants away with a great training camp, and all of a sudden maybe he winds up being that guy. Then again, Giants crossing their fingers that Eli never has to come out of a game anyway.
Absolutely. And that only you have insurance on the roster as a policy, not necessarily a quarterback that you need to turn to. But I think that it doesn't hurt from Davis Webb's perspective if he doesn't have the pressure coming in year one, even to be the backup quarterback, Paul. Oh. To not at least feel that, oh my God, God forbid, he's got to then come in just like that and it's baptism by fire.
Remember, your backup quarterback, much like every single other position on the field, is one snap away from maybe being in under a live bullet situation. And so, yeah, I think, you know, certainly he's coming in, that is Webb, as the number three right now. And look, wherever the chips wind up falling is where they're going to fall. If he turns out to deserve the number two spot, well, God bless him. You know, if he earns it. And you know what? If he does, then chances are he's probably prepared for the pressure and he probably will do fine. But let's not push it.
Well, we'll see what plays out in terms of when he gets here for rookie minicamp. He's going to be one of the names to certainly keep close tabs on, as is the rest of the draft class and a lot of undrafted players that are going to be invited to rookie minicamp. No official list has been revealed by the Giants, but as we get closer to Friday, certainly we'll throw some names out at you. And that goes back to, Paul, what you and I were talking about earlier in the week. Until these players sign on the dotted line, things are up in the air in
sure.
terms of exactly who's going to be a rookie minicamp.
Yeah, you know, you have a lot of guys who are being given either verbals or given handshake deals, but until they actually get to minicamp and pass their physicals and then sign, then they get to go out on the field for the actual rookie minicamp itself. and do what they can to try and earn a spot in the training camp roster, which is a 90-man deal, you know, over the summer.
Well, on the topic of rookies, one player in particular that we had just been talking about is Davis Webb, and to provide more insight on that, we got a very special guest on the line, and that is former NFL head coach, two seasons with the Redskins, former quarterback of the Seahawks, also a quarterback coach across many different NFL teams, and he's helped mentor Davis Webb as he prepared for the NFL draft, and that is Jim Zorn. Jim, Lance Metal, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Greatly appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's great. Hey, thanks. It's good to be on with you guys.
Thank you, Jim.
Absolutely, Jim. And we certainly appreciate you putting some time aside. So if you could tell us how exactly you got connected with Davis Webb and how this relationship started in order to prepare him for his track record heading into the NFL draft.
Yeah, I think originally that he was going to work with someone who was a quarterback coach as well, and that person got a job. So I was coaching QBs at the time and was called by Davis's agent, and then worked out an opportunity to start in January, which is when we started to work together, and worked all the way through until just even last week. So it's been probably three days a week I would go down to California and work those 3 days, and then come back up and then go back down. And we accomplished a lot. We were working together to prepare for the Senior Bowl, then the Combine, then his Pro Day, and all the way through trying to get a vocabulary of NFL terms and things, hoping that there would be some carryover.
Well, Jim, let me ask you this. From the time you got with Davis in January till you said last week was your last workout, and I'm assuming that relationship will continue off and on during the course of his rookie season at the very least, what has been the biggest area or maybe multiple areas of improvement that you've seen in him as he prepares to be a pro?
Yes, I think, off the field, like in the classroom, that's been a huge area of work because – he had not had to look at video the way we started looking at video, and then I'm trying to understand defensive fronts and how they connect with coverages and stunts and blitzes, and then get the terms down. So when we were talking about a 25 front or a 57 front or a 49 front, we didn't have to say, what was that? What are you talking about? What am I talking about? So we got on the same page. And then I also taught kind of different vocabulary words, but we used more of a West Coast foundation. But, of course, there's other types of vocabularies out there. Every team's got its own. And fortunately, the New York Giants have a very similar way they call defensive fronts. There's a few differences, but they use these terms that we've already worked on, and so that's going to be an advantage for him to not have to learn it. He still has to. I mean, there's so much he still has to learn. But in this first experience, at least he's going to hear words that he's familiar with, and that'll be an advantage. And then the second thing that he's probably improved the most on is just becoming more efficient as a drop back passer and giving himself the ability to move out of that drop back, that suddenness of moving laterally so that he can escape and get out of some sort of pressure or trouble. And those are the things I think he's improved the most on. He's still trying to work all of those things physically into his accuracy, because once you change, he started dropping back from underneath the center, and, that sort of changes the rhythm of your game a little bit. And a lot of these college quarterbacks, they drop, but they sort of bounce around a little bit. They lope a drop or bounce drop just because they don't really have a rhythm or a timing to some of their plays. They just figure out what it's going to take them to get the ball out. And in the NFL, it's not like that.
Right. Jim, we've been talking here just before you came on that, you know, initially it looks like he'll be the number three for the Giants behind Eli Manning and then either Geno Smith or Josh Johnson. From your perspective, is it unrealistic to expect that Davis could compete for the number two job during his rookie season, or is he still in such an early developmental phase that probably is not something that people should even think about?
Yeah, I would. I wouldn't try to be concerned about that. You know, whether he's going to be two or three yet, because as he goes in, his job is to try to be up to a speed where he gives himself a chance to compete. And I think he's going to do that. I think he has the chance to do that. And then not knowing where he's going to come in compared to all those other guys, I don't think he should himself be concerned about it, just because there's so much to learn. So all these guys will have an advantage over him because they've got that year, or as in Eli's case, years, and he should be coming in and trying to get up to a speed where he gives himself a chance to compete. And I really believe he'll do that. I don't know what and that's what we're talking about here, I guess, is what the timing of that is so that he can become the number two QB. And I would say that remains to be seen.
Talking with former NFL head coach, quarterbacks coach Jim Zorn, also worked with Davis Webb leading up to the NFL draft. And, Jim, based on what you just laid out, you know, you've worked with a variety of different quarterbacks during the course of your NFL career, and there's always the debate about, you know, what the expectation should be for a young quarterback. But, you know, as you just mentioned, the expectations are not very high because he has the luxury to learn from Eli Manning. From a coaching perspective, how advantageous is it to have a guy like Eli Manning in the classroom working with Davis Webb for the next few years to sort of be another coaching voice in terms of preparing him for when he ultimately could be ready to be the starter?
Well, Davis hit a sweet spot when he got drafted by the New York Giants. One, because it's an outstanding organization. Two, they have a veteran QB that is right in a prime. And so he's going to be able to sit in that room and get some detail that he really wouldn't get if he was going to have to be the starter. So he's got some real advantages sitting there in that room. But I would say this too, that as he sits there, another advantage he has again is with what we've been working on. With the vocabulary and with this new language, I said this earlier, there's carryover. So he won't be in the dark. I mean, can you imagine? I've sat in rooms. Here I am coaching Matt Hasselbeck, Trent Dilfer, and, a rookie quarterback comes in. I can't speak to, in my meeting, speak to the rookie quarterback, because I've got these veteran QBs want detail information. So you have, and they didn't have a vocabulary, 10 weeks before they came in. So they're lost on day one, and it's a shock. That's probably going to be the biggest difference. Davis will not have this shock of, oh my gosh, what did he just say? He said. He said storm. What is storm? And so those kinds of things won't set him back. He'll actually be able to track a little bit quicker than, say, a guy coming in cold turkey.
Jim, let me ask you this. From your perspective, what do you think are Davis's most valuable and most positive attributes as he translates into the pro game?
Well, I think to begin with, he wants to keep things very simple in his life outside of football right now. So that is a true advantage, and he's really able to do that, which is surprising. You know, he's not so enamored with, gosh, I'm going to be a star now. He's got his New York Giants hat, and he's going to come, with whatever he's had, and he's going to hunker down and study. I think that's a real advantage. He's really got the ability to concentrate for long periods of time. And what I'm hoping is that he'll be able to transfer his ability to study and to concentrate into, concentrating on the correct things, because you can get caught up in some of the minutia that doesn't matter, but he really wants to focus in on the things that matters. So I think that's a real strength. And, every time I was around Cal, where he went to school, he had a great, I really had this sense that he had a great relationship, and he'd only been there 1 year, but everybody was very respectful of him, and he was very respectful of everybody else. And that was from the players to the administration, the staff, and just everybody around. Just he appreciated them, and they appreciated him. And I think that's what he'll bring to the Giants, so that he can enter in and really be just a part of the organization. He wants to be a part of the organization. He's not coming. I don't think he's going to walk in and say, "Well, here I am, folks. how do you feel?" that I walked in. I just think he's going to walk in and enter and just really want to learn and be a part of the organization. The bottom line, and this is for everybody, is how can he take all this information and the coaching and the lifestyle and make it work on the field? And, we don't develop players in this league like we used to. We really do want an immediate return.
Sure.
But he's got an advantage here, and I hope he takes advantage of it by sitting in there with these QBs and the QB coach and the offensive coordinator and really learn and sit and be patient. He has a chance to have the club be patient with him because of Eli, and I think that's a true advantage where some of the other guys coming out this year will not have that advantage.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because it's maybe more of a baptism by fire where there's more of an urgency to fill that void compared to what the Giants are looking at. Jim, you alluded to trying to really rebuild his vocabulary, and I guess that has to do with a lot from the system he came from, not just at Cal, but Texas Tech, more of a spread type of offense where maybe you look towards the sideline to get the calls in as opposed to the huddle type of aspect. And I'm sure you've heard this through the media when you evaluate most quarterbacks. They get labeled as the system type quarterbacks, and then all of a sudden they have to come to the NFL and you have to transform them. How challenging is that for when a quarterback gets labeled as a system guy and it's only because of the system that they're succeeding? Now you have to sell other people on the fact, no, he still has the skill set that he can succeed in just about any system.
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think it has to do, you got to think that anytime a quarterback is handed a playbook, it is a system. This is the system we're going to use. Even the New York Giants, they've got a system. And the difference is the systems are very simple in college football. And I'll just give you one example that's extremely difficult for college quarterbacks transferring to the NFL. And you alluded to it when you said they look to the sideline. So think about this. Davis, for four or if you redshirt 5 years, you look to the sideline for the play, and either there's two of the players signaling or there's cards held up,
yeah.
One has a flower on it, the other has an arrow, and there's an elephant, right? And it all means something. Everybody looks at those cards, and the elephant meant protection, or the arrow meant it's a formation, or and then the bird that's flying means, a pattern. Well, nobody says anything. he just lifts his leg and the ball snapped and here we go. And they try to do it as fast as they can. And the play call, they don't have as many plays, right? It's just very repetitive. Well, in the NFL, you have to call the play in the huddle, basically. There are no signals from the sideline. There might be a formation or direction, but you are the one giving fight. That has been hilarious. So try to listen to him try to call a play in the beginning. It was so monotone. It was just, okay, green, right, 98, stretch, you know, boss. Is that play going to be successful? Because it sure doesn't sound like it's going to be successful. How are you going to say a play in the huddle that lets everybody know, man, this is just a great play? How are you going to emote? How are you going to pause at the right time? You can't have these run-on. You can't have a run-on sentence when you're calling a play, because the play is really divided up with shifts or motions, the formation, another shift or motion, the play itself or the protection, and then the play itself, and then you got to have the snap count, and then you got to remember the snap count. I mean, those are things that these guys have a real lack of experience in, and I've been excited for Davis just because he's moved more towards that monotone, I'm bored and you're going to be bored with this play call, to more of an upbeat deal. But I know this, he's going to digress as soon as he walks into that first huddle, and it's going to crack me up because he will not be able to remember completely in sequence these words yet until they become more knowledgeable and comfortable for him. I'll be laughing, but I don't think he'll be laughing.
Jim, do you expect to... I'm sorry, go ahead.
He wants to be good. I was just going to say, he wants to be good, and he takes it. He takes all this stuff serious. He takes it to heart. He can have fun with it. He can be poked fun at by his teammates, and he gets it. You know, he's going to be a real good teammate, I think, just based on what I've seen so far.
Final one from me, Jim, before I let Lance finish it up. Will you continue to work with Davis throughout the rest of this offseason till the season starts? Do you anticipate working with him even beyond that? Is that something that, you know, that your relationship with him and the program that you guys have developed will continue onward?
Well, I would say that initially my time's over because he is going to be there. There's no way he's coming out of that area at that building. He's going to do everything there. He's not going to come back. He's there. Once he shows up today or tomorrow, you're going to be sick of seeing him in the building. he's going to try to be there all the time. So that's going to happen. Now, he may call me, and because we do have a relationship, but I know this, that I'll be deferring everything because I'm not his coach now. I will not be his coach. He's got a quarterback coach. He's got an offensive coordinator, and they need to speak into his life because,
right.
And that's really how I've coached him. You know, whatever I said, they may think differently about how to drop back or how to hold the ball, how to, you know, what your release is. And whatever they say, they've got to see it in you. I don't have to see it in you. So I've gotten him ready to try to understand how to be efficient, how to be explosive, and then now he's going to be coached by his quarterback coach. I will tell you that we probably, you know, if there is not a playoff system, I mean, if the Giants are in the playoffs and go to the Super Bowl, and let's say that's in February. Well, those quarterbacks are all players. They don't get to be coached again until May. A coach can't be on the field with
right.
them. So I believe that he'll be that kind of player where he'll want to get better. He'll want to get closer to Eli as he possibly can in ability And he'll do that in the off season while he's getting himself ready for that next year. That's what I think will probably work again.
That'd be great.
Well, Jim, last one for me, you know, and I think you alluded to some of this with your previous answer, but, you know, as a quarterback guru and somebody that works and tries to tweak the mechanics and the language of many different quarterbacks, I mean, how is it difficult for you to maybe draw the line where somebody who's now established with an NFL team wants your assistance, but like you said, you also need to take into consideration the coaching staff of that respective team is also guiding that player in a specific way?
Yeah, that's a great question, and again, that's why I try to look at players when he's dropping back. Is he efficient, or does he have all the throws? Because in the NFL, you have to make a throw based on the protection working and the timing working. So you've got these throws where you drop back, you throw it on rhythm, and everything's hunky dory. You get the completion, you throw a great pass, but there is a percentage of throws that don't happen like that. Mm-hmm. You have to you start your drop back, you have to scramble. You start your drop back, you have to pedal out of the way of a oncoming rusher, or your tackle just got bull rushed, so you get squeezed. So you have to throw the ball as well. Nobody else down the field knows that you have to move, but you do have to move, and so you still have to have a good motion to do that. I would say this: the quarterbacks that are inefficient in their game, if they're inefficient, then they have the trouble of having all of these throws that you need, and they're limited, so they can only take you so far. And you know this; you've watched Eli now for several years. He's got this ability to throw off balance.
Yeah,
he can throw in tight spots. He can move and throw, and those are the kinds of things that Davis will have to learn if he's going to get close to Eli and take over at some point in his career. He's got to be able to do that, and that's what I help. I'm not trying to coach. Hey, no, I don't. You shouldn't read it like the coach told you to read this play. You need to read it like I would tell you to read this play. You know, I would not undermine ever.
Right.
A coaching staff, because I know what it's like, and I know what it's like to be on that staff, and you've got to have things done the way you're coaching that young man to do them, because that's the way you think as a coach this play is going to be successful. So yeah, that's not my job. That's the coach's job. My job would just be help a guy to continue. Even Eli, I could help Eli by helping him to work hard during drill work. We could watch video together, and we could watch how he's, you know, maybe how he's working through a play. Where's his head? Is he in a good position to be explosive if he had to be, and all those kinds of things. So I mean, that's what I would do instead of just trying to coach the offense into a guy mm-hmm. that he's already being coached.
Absolutely. Jim, before we let you go, I wanted to give you an opportunity. I know you and your wife are very active in Medical Teams International. If you want to just maybe talk about your efforts with respect to that before we let you go.
Well, this is a tremendous organization. It's actually based in the Northwest, but it is very international. And this is a organization that is in many ways helping directly with disasters that happen right in the moment, in the present. So if something happened today, medical teams would be one of the first responders, and they usually find a niche in that first response because there's so many great organizations that help. And then medical teams just does a great job with ongoing care and immediate help, ongoing help, and teaching in remote parts of our world where really these villages of isolated people, and these people are the most needy, the most vulnerable. Medical teams comes in and not only it gives them immediate help so that these families have true relief in some of the cares that they that they must have, but they train them, and they send people, villagers that they've hired and they've trained themselves to come in and actually be a part of these villages.
Wow.
To train them to. So it's really a great organization, and many people are involved volunteer wise, and they've got great people in the administrative part of this organization that really are set, that are just true to the mission, I guess, if you will, the mission of the organization. And they do a good job with keeping the, all of the medical supplies organized, ready to go. And I'm just skimming the surface of the depth of this organization. So it's been a privilege, actually, for Joy and myself to be just a part of it. And, you know, we're kind of just ambassadors right now. We've been on trips, but, nothing like what really happens in disasters and some of the most needy places in our world. We haven't been able to experience that. So we're ambassadors for it, for sure.
Well, we greatly appreciate your efforts on that front. And, Jim, thanks so much for coming on, providing some insight about Davis Webb, as well as mentoring quarterbacks and the challenges that they have to go through to transition from college to the pros. Really appreciate it.
Great stuff, Jim. Thank you.
I'm excited for him, and I'm excited for you guys to be able to get him going. And he's very, very friendly. But hopefully you won't see him because he'll be in the QB room studying.
Well, hopefully, Jim, for his sake, when he finally gets in there, he won't have to be running around as much as you did when you first got to Seattle. Because I remember how you had to scramble. Holy smokes, did you have to scramble.
Yep. That's why I know how to teach it, too.
Thank you, Jim.
Jim,
all the best
thanks so
to you.
Much. Appreciate it.
All right, I'll see you later. Bye, guys.
Sounds good. All right, that was Jim Zorn, former NFL head coach, former NFL quarterbacks coach, also played for the Seahawks with Steve Largent, top wideout, and mentored Davis Webb leading up to the draft. He worked with him, as you just mentioned, as you just heard, in terms of the combine and all the other events and activities leading up to the draft going back to January. So
very
he's been
generous
with
his time
for indeed.
Us to give us the half hour. We've been efforting to try to get him since the draft, and obviously he just said he finished working with Davis last week as the rookie prepared to get here to the Giants facility. So I can think of nobody who would better be able to talk about him and give us some insight. And everything he said not only enhance what other people have told us about Davis Webb, but I love the fact that he talked about how well-grounded he is. Not just a study worker, you know, study wart, not just a film guy, but very grounded, wants to blend into the team. You know, so many quarterbacks, even if they're smart quarterbacks, they have that little air about them. You know, they walk in the room and I'm the quarterback. You know, I'm the guy. Sounds like Davis wants to be one of the guys, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, seems to be well grounded based on what Jim Zorn just mentioned. I think what was interesting about what Jim got into compared to some of the previous guests we've had on, Paul, that have talked about Davis Webb, the language.
That's
the type of stuff that the casual fan is not going to notice.
No.
That's happening in the classroom, learning the jargon, in the huddle, learning what it takes to give out the play. I mean, those were things that Jim provided insight
that
I thought
never heard that from
really
anybody.
Great. And it just goes to show you also, you know, when you come from a system which is not a pro-style system, not a pro-style offense, these are the challenges, not just Davis Webb, Paul, but a lot of these college quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. They're all dealing with this, learning how to command the huddle. It's not so much memorizing the plays. As he mentioned, I thought was interesting, getting in the huddle and convincing your teammates that they want to run the play and run through a wall for you when you run the play.
Yeah,
that's a big part of it.
There was stuff that he said in that conversation that even after all the years that I've been involved in the game, I had never actually heard somebody talk about before. And, it was funny about how he said the monotone making the call, and he may not even get all the words in the right order, and, you know,
or you're putting your teammates to sleep because it's taking you a half hour to read the play.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Just really good stuff. So I'm happy he was able to join us today.
Well, now it's time to open up the phone lines to you, the listeners, as well as the callers at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll try to get to some tweets as well. Dean is in Connecticut. He gets us going here on Wednesday's edition. What's happening, Dean?
Lance, Paul, how we doing today, guys?
Hi. Doing well, Dean. What do you got for us?
Yeah, I was doing a little reading, and I'm reading that Darian Thompson's injury is not coming along as expected. Is he
Says
still
going
to be ready for mandatory workouts?
Says who?
Dan Duggan.
Well, that's his opinion. I can only tell you that my understanding is that Thompson is coming along fine, and there are not many concerns about it.
Well, that's why I'm glad I talked to Mr. Dottino.
Look, I will tell you this. There is certainly a possibility, okay, certainly a possibility that they may bring him along slowly in training camp because you don't want him to have a setback. I understand that, and maybe that's what he's alluding to, okay? Mm-hmm. That's absolutely possible. But do they expect him to be ready for week one of the regular season? As far as I know, yes.
Well, and I could also see them, you know, similar to even JPP touched on this. He may not be a full participant in the off-season and spring workouts, but when it gets closer to training camp and you're starting to implement the plays and a little bit more physicality, then perhaps you take a significant step forward. But, I mean, considering it's only May, Dean. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't get overly worried. Even if Darian Thompson, I didn't see the story, I didn't see the quote, but even if he did allude to the fact that they're bringing him along slowly, that's typical for most players that are coming off of injuries like that. Well, remember, you know, Thompson had the shoulder and the foot injury. He had two injuries.
Let's put
season.
It this way. Yeah. The only guy who I have even heard in the conversation about potentially PUP has been Geno Smith. No one has mentioned Darian Thompson in regards to PUP at all to this point. So to me, that indicates there's not much of a worry. You follow?
Yes, sir. 100%.
Doesn't mean they can't bring him along slowly. But, you know, when you hear the PUP word, that gives you a little reason to pause.
Absolutely. Another thing I wanted to touch on. So, with the quarterback situation, I'm assuming that they brought in Geno to be the backup quarterback. But what if Webb does beat out Geno? Do you see him carrying three quarterbacks on the roster?
No, they carried three last year. And
sounds
carried
like they
three in the past.
Sounds
That's
like they
we
will.
Have no fullback, though.
Well, but once again, I mean, you can also keep one less defensive back, one less offensive lineman. There's other ways to get around that. But to say that there hasn't been examples of where the Giants haven't kept three quarterbacks is misleading because, you know, they have in previous past, even with Eli Manning on the roster, especially when he's had, you know, veteran quarterbacks behind him. They've still have kept three at some points.
Yeah, I was just a little worried about that because I know we always like to bring in extra defensive backs because they always get nicked up. But I'm a little worried about the linebacker unit. Like, I'm thinking we might have to carry an extra linebacker. Like, is there anybody even out there serviceable on the market still?
Well, what worries you about the linebacker position that you need to keep an extra body?
Speed.
Speed, you said?
I think we need a faster linebacker, but Devon Kennard has had his injury issues. We don't know what JT Thomas is going to bring us.
He's coming off injury.
You know, I'm just not – I just don't feel like we have that elite linebacker that we need sideline to sideline speed. And that's why I was kind of upset with the quarterback pick in the third round because I felt like there was better value at that point.
No, not at that point. Not at that point. In the third round, no. Once Cunningham came off the board – there weren't any other linebackers who were going to make the kind of impact that you're talking about. And therefore, it would have been a mistake for them to reach and grab one.
Yeah, I wanted that kid out of Florida, but not that high. But I'll tell you this. I'm very excited about Dalvin Tomlinson. Like, the more tape I watch of this kid, he gets out of his stance quicker than I've seen the Linville Joseph for Hankins do. And this kid is a bulldozer. I can see him pushing the pocket next to Snacks. I think we got to steal him with Dalvin Thomas.
Anxious to see him when he gets here, for sure.
And he has a great opportunity to fill the voids of those two players that you mentioned. I think it'll be interesting to see how much pressure he does get because his sack numbers are very similar to Joseph and Hankins in college. Mm-hmm. Not a huge disparity, but – playing next to Snack should give him opportunities, especially if Snack draws attention. But, I mean, that remains to be seen. I wouldn't get too ahead of ourselves to think that he's automatically going to come in, Dean. And I'm not saying that you were saying this, and he's going to, you know, put up sack numbers above and beyond what Hankins and Joseph did. But there's potential based on the talent around him. I don't think that's a
stretch. I'm not worried about the defensive tackles getting that many sacks as long as they collapse that pocket and let the ends get around the edge. I'm happy with that.
Well,
you want to push that pocket and you want to close the pocket down, and we got two elite run stopping and pass rushing defensive ends. I mean, I can't tell you the last time that we've had two ends that play the run and the pass as well. I mean, well, OC and Strahan did, but I mean, I'm just really excited about the defensive line and the secondary this year. And I think if we stay healthy, we got a really good shot.
Well, and I throw Justin Tuck in that conversation, too.
Obviously.
I mean, he's another one. So
obviously.
They've had plenty.
Tuck played the run very well.
I mean, they've had a lot of defensive ends on this team. And appreciate the phone call, Dean, who,
you know,
move to the inside and also even seal off the edge and stop the run. I mean, that's always priority number one. It's got to be priority number one for JPP and Vernon, too.
You know, remember, with the linebacking situation, Keenan Robinson became the versatile cover linebacker, the guy who stayed on the field in the sub-package. And quite frankly, with teams going to more and more sub-package earlier in the possessions because of the way teams are, you know, throwing as much as they are, you know, do you need a first and second down run-stopping linebacker who's going to be fast enough, you know, to get sideline to sideline? Probably not so much anymore. This is what part we talk about when the game is morphed. You know, it's not the same game anymore. You know, Harry Carson was really important in the day when he played. And I love Harry Carson and thought he should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. But right now, I mean, look at a guy like Kuechly. Kuechly is nothing like what Harry Carson was. He's now the prototype of the new three-down middle linebacker because of his coverage skills.
That's the big difference.
You know? And very few teams have one of those guys who can stay on the field at the middle linebacker spot for all three downs.
And Keenan is the Giants' version of that. I mean, he's a guy that you can drop back in coverage if you needed to.
But again, doing it with sub-package schematically as opposed to just saying, oh, you're the guy in the middle and you're staying on the field. It's just a different way to approach it because there were very few guys like that.
Plus, they can always keep a few linebackers on the practice squad, too, for concerns about injuries.
Sure.
You can do that. It's not as if, you know, there's no way for them to hold on to some depth at that position, which they've done in the past. But if they feel that three quarterbacks, there's value in holding on to that, you can't think about when you're orchestrating your 53-man roster, well, we need to keep a seventh or an eighth linebacker because we're worried that, you know, Devon Kennard or somebody else, because of their track record, could get hurt. I mean, anybody could get hurt on the roster.
Interesting, while we're talking about linebackers, Mark Herzlick wearing number 44 now during the Giants offseason program because, as it was alluded to in an article the other day, I believe it might have been the Post.
Well, he was in the same event that Geno Smith was.
Yes.
So they all spoke to the media.
And quoted in those stories as saying he is working out at tight end wearing number 44. If you go to Giants.com on the website, you'll see his number is now number 44. Tomlinson is 94. And with 44, Herzlick has the opportunity now to be tight end eligible. And so he's done some work at tight end, and we'll see if he winds up being a two-way player.
Yeah, he said part of the rationale was so he doesn't have to walk over to the official every time he checks into the game and say, by the way, I'm a tight end or a tackle-eligible player. And, you know, one of the things that he mentioned was, and, you know, this is what every player should look at who's at the tail end of the roster and trying to solidify a roster out. The more you can do, Paul, whether it's special teams, whether it be defense, whether it be offense, gives you a better opportunity to solidify a roster spot.
Sixth-year pro now, Mark Herzlick, who has done a very good job on special teams during his career.
That's where he's made a name for himself.
Limited action in the defense, but been one of the better special teams players they've had during the last several years.
And Nikita Whitlock is another guy who's played both sides of the football.
That's correct.
It's not a unique experience. The Giants have a player that has that versatility, but it's new to hear it from Herzlick's perspective, considering he's mainly been a defensive player. All right, let's head back to the lines. Bash is in Ohio. Bash, what's happening?
How are we doing, Lance and Paul?
Hi.
I just got to what I was calling about as far as news about Mark Herzlick playing the tight end position. That's just what I was calling anybody else that's talking about it.
Well, you know, it's certainly interesting, and I'm assuming, and I have not had the chance to talk to Mark about it personally, but I'm assuming when he talked to the writers, I guess at some point they probably asked him whose idea it was. My guess is it was his. I'm thinking that he was probably just eager to do it, And they said, okay, you know, you want to give it a shot? That's okay with us. Why not? You know?
Yeah. I mean, I was just calling to see as far as where did that come from, as far as you did that, as far as him being a linebacker, as previous callers said, as far as us being short a linebacker and being loaded in the tight end room, as far as his position would be a linebacker or running back, won't change the number. Will he be a tight end or is he still a linebacker?
No,
as far
he can be both.
53-man roster.
He can be both. At 44, he can be either a linebacker or a tight end. He doesn't have to check in, as Lance said. That's the beauty of having that number.
That's part of the rationale behind changing the number. And the other thing that I wanted to add about why this is happening, Herzlick has played tight end on the scout team. So in practices, they've utilized him in that position. So
That's true.
Got somewhat of a track record and a history there. This wasn't, you know, one day he rolled out of bed and said, hey, I want to play tight end.
Yeah, but
they've utilized him in
that
capacity.
But that was simply because they needed a body to play the spot.
Well, of course. But then he said, if this is a way to maximize my potential on the roster, why not at least
You know, if they just needed a body for practice to just fill in the spot, I'd have been available. You know?
And I would have paid to maybe watch.
I got a little free time on my hands during practice. I'd go out there for him.
I don't know. They may have to tweak the NFL CBA under those circumstances. What else you got, Bash?
All right, I just had a question about it. Is that, as far as the 53-man roster, is that listed as far as linebacker and tight end? Is that a ball being as far as the position is listed as far as the 53-man roster, as far as the tight end position and linebacker position. It starts 53-man roster, but the linebackers being not that many. And tight end role being loaded with about 60 tight ends. So was that?
No, I think you're reading a little too much into it. When they announced the 53-man roster, I mean, at the end of the day, it makes no difference whether he'd be listed as a linebacker or a tight end, but he'd probably be listed as a linebacker with a guy who has the potential to play tight end, just like Whitlock. When Nikita Whitlock made the roster, he was not listed as a defensive lineman.
Correct.
He was listed as a fullback.
Correct.
Who may be utilized as a defensive lineman. So
yes.
Herzlick's always going to be listed as a linebacker. It's up to the Giants if he makes the roster, if they want to utilize him in other spots. That's all it comes down to.
Okay.
Thanks, Bash.
I just wanted to get some clarity on that. Thanks,
no worries.
Fellas.
You
no
got
problem.
It, Bash. Appreciate
the
phone call. Yeah, and we also have a lot of these conversations when we're trying to figure out, you know, how they compose the 53-man roster. But at the end of the day, Herzlick would count as one player. He's not counting as a tight end.
He's not two players.
Exactly. So, I mean, where he gets listed, it really doesn't have a major impact. But I understand that that's part of the thinking, whether they keep X amount of players at what position.
One thing for sure, if he's on the team, he's playing specials.
Yes, I think that's a safe assumption heading into week one. Caesar is in the Bronx. Caesar, what's happening?
Come on, guys.
Hi.
How we doing?
Long time caller.
Cool.
Long time listener.
Well, that's good
caller.
Too.
That's fine. No matter your label, we allow you to come on the program.
Okay. Guys, I just wanted to take a quick moment and just talk about a couple of things, probably like two or three things. But first of all, I just wanted to commend Jerry Reese on the off-season acquisitions that we made this year. I think Brandon Marshall is going to be a huge, huge asset for Eli Manning. The last time I called was in 2011, and that's when we won the Super Bowl, thankfully. And, you know, the weaknesses on the defense has been, you know, during the years has changed on over to our strengths. Back then in 2011, our secondary was really, really decimated. And now if you look at it, I mean, based off last year's performances and stuff like that, our defense is definitely going to be our identity this year. What do you guys think about that?
I would agree with you. We've had conversations all throughout the offseason. You know, everybody's talking about wanting to add more weapons on offense, and I get that. But I think last year was a big turning point to show that the identity of this team is defense. I would agree with you. I mean, that's a big staple of this team, and I understand that I'm saying that when you got Eli Manning, you got a plethora of weapons on offense. They just drafted Evan Ingram, and I'm not saying that they're not going to look to improve the point total this year, but their identity is in the trenches and with their secondary based on how well those guys played last season, and I don't see that drastically changing entering this year, because why get away from your strength? The strength of the team last year was defense. It was a big reason why they made such a huge stride. They went from 32nd ranked in most departments to top 10 just about everywhere across the board. So, I mean, I still think that that's going to be the part of this team, the facet of this team that's going to dictate how far they're going to go again.
Definitely. This question might be a little bit more towards Paul Dott. Paul, I know you're a big proponent of the power running game.
Yeah.
So am I. I am one of those fans that, definitely play Madden football and stuff like that. So it's very important, even if it's whether it's lifetime, real football or just video game football.
I definitely
think that the power game is definitely something that's needed. Now, considering the fact that we made all of these moves the past 2 years when it comes to free agents, shoring up the defense, the blocking tight end and stuff like that, what perplexes me a little bit is the fact that we are in win mode right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, the only thing that has not correlated with that phrase more say is the fact that we do not have a power running game, and we do not have I would say a little bit more depth in regards to the offensive linemen. Definitely everything starts in the trenches.
Yes.
I believe that.
Yes.
I played football, and everything starts up front in the trenches. Now my question to you, Paul Dott, is what do you think our sixth-round pick would be able to do in regards to, filling in and possibly giving Eric Flowers the competition that he needs? Because I feel like coming out of college, Eric Flowers was just given the job by default.
Beattie got hurt.
Beattie got, that injury played a big role.
That's what really did it. When Beattie got hurt, it pushed Flowers into an immediate situation.
Right. Right. Well, do you believe that may have stunted his development a little bit? So being thrown to the wolves that quickly, considering the fact that, I know he's just 23 years old. I'm not downplaying how important he is, but I just feel like, if that's going to be definitely a point in emphasis in trying to keep Eli upright. No matter whether, the offense is trying to throw the ball quick or whatever the case is, there's going to be a point in time where we may need that extra second or
right.
two to keep Eli up so that way he can find and go through with his progressions.
I'll give you two comments. First of all, in terms of Flowers, I'm not going to give that to him as an excuse. I think the thing that hurt Flowers' development more than anything else in his first 2 years in the NFL was the horrific sprained ankle he suffered in the first month of his rookie season that badly hampered him his entire rookie year and then took the entire offseason to heal. Because when he came back for year two last season, he was unable to do a whole lot to progress his game from year one to year two. And I think if you want to pinpoint one thing that really inhibited him from getting to be a better player sooner, it would be that badly sprained ankle that he suffered early in his rookie season. That's my take on it. I'm not going to give him any other excuses. As far as Bisnovati from Pitt, the lineman that they took in the sixth round, they made a trade of a seventh round pick to go up a few spots to get him. I told John yesterday on the show, from everything I have heard, remember, his coach at Pitt is one who is a blue-collar guy. He will not play the sexier athlete. He will play guys who work hard, who foam at the mouth, who bark at you, who will fight you in the trenches. The Richie Seibert kind of guys. The underdogs who will scrap and fight and do everything they can to try to get the job done. Forget about the blueprint. Forget about making it pretty. Forget about, all of the gloss and the glitz. He's the kind of guy, Bisnovati, because he fits the coach's temperament, who was just going to go out there and say, look, you're not getting to my quarterback, and I will do everything I can to stop you. So it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be technically sound, but he will fight you. That's the kind of guy who I will take on my offensive lineman depth chart any day of the week. Now,
sure, I agree with that.
So he's going to come in, and he's going to be fighting for a backup job. I'd say the odds are pretty good he's going to get one of those backup jobs, and then it's up to him as to how high he can take it. I'm not going to make a prediction on that because I do know that, there are athletic issues that he doesn't have all the great athletic skills and talents that a higher round draft choice would have. That's why he was a sixth round pick. So there are going to be some limitations there. But, you know, Richie Seibert had limitations too, and he started for a Super Bowl champion. Let's not forget that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, Caesar.
I mean, do you project him to be more of a tackle or more of a guard?
He projects, from what I understand, to be more of a guard, and I would tell you why. When I did video on him, he doesn't have great footwork, and he tends to block inside of his phone booth. Does not have a lot of mobility and range in terms of executing what he needs to do because he's not a great athlete. So he does project probably more to guard. That's not to say he couldn't play tackle in a pinch if you needed him.
All right, Caesar, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. Want to get to a few more phone calls before we wrap up. We got Alan in Brooklyn. Alan, what's happening?
Hi, how you doing, Paul and Lance?
Hi. Hello.
Quick question. DLC injury against Green Bay, is this something that's lingering now, or is this something if he had a game next week, he would be in the game?
I didn't hear there was anything.
Yeah, I noticed. I haven't heard anything about that. If it was something that's lingering, or is it something that he could just jump right back into next week if he had to?
Well, he didn't, to my knowledge, he didn't suffer anything that required, you know, major off-season procedures or anything like that. So, I mean, unless you heard anything through the rumorville, I haven't heard anything where he'd be expected to be sidelined for a period of time. So, I mean, I would assume, I mean, once again, you know, all of these players may be limited in the spring because they're not looking to all, you know, put pressure on them to get hurt. But come training camp, I don't see why he would be limited in any capacity.
I got you. Oh, quick question for Paul. I noticed a lot lately, video games coming up. Paul, have you strapped it up to play video games before?
No, I don't play video games. I stopped giving. I gave up video game football when Intellivision was discontinued. How about that? And I'm not kidding you. I'm telling you the truth. I used to play that all the time, and when that went out of style, that was the end of video game football for me.
Hasn't played video games since Atari. So
Intellivision was better than Atari.
Well, I was trying to give you a little versatility in that department.
Lance, real quick, I've noticed you and John have a healthy competitive nature. You think you could beat him in a race?
Who, John?
John, yeah.
A healthy competitive nature? Is that what you would phrase it? Boy, you're really digging deep with these questions. I would say that I would have faith in going up against anyone on the staff here. Behind the camera or on the camera. How about that, okay?
Look at it this way. He's so short that his stride is going to allow him to take these short little quick steps.
Well, there you go.
I mean, is that fair? Just saying.
You use what you got, as I always say.
Have a good day, sir.
Use what you got. All right, Alan. Appreciate the phone call.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy
your day.
Thanks
so much. All right, how about Nick in the Meadowlands? Nick, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, fellas?
How we doing, Nick?
Are you really in the Meadowlands? I'm kidding.
I'm in Middlebury, Paul.
How you doing?
Hey, you still laughing about that Jelly Roll joke?
Oh, man, you had me really going on that one.
You had me laughing, man. Yeah, I didn't mean nothing by that. I'm not talking about snacks or anybody. I just look at Dalvin Tomlinson. Look at his physique. He's not a jelly roll.
Hey, just get the job done, right?
Yeah, let's see what happens. But the caller that called before with the optimism, thank you. You know, have a little optimism. Jerry Reese has done a good job. You talk about what you've done for me lately. He's done a lot lately. Mm-hmm. So let's have a little faith. And I'm going to start calling Charlie the Grim Reaper, man.
Hey, he's been better.
All that negativity, man.
Charlie's been better this offseason. I find his calls to be much more even keel, much more analytical. I think John should actually get rid of his sound effects because Charlie has come back to the human race from outer space, and he now makes sense with his phone calls.
Well, it's still the offseason, though. Let's see what he sounds like during the season.
He was talking with Fiegels, and he was talking about what can happen with Eli. Let's not cross that bridge till we come with it, you know, and come to it, you know. let's leave it alone for now. But I think what you're talking about with the sixth-round pick, Paul, I think that guy will make the offensive line better. Forget about what Jerry Reese did with all the weapons. You know, I think that guy is going to come in with a hunger, and that's going to – I think the offense is going to come out anyway with a chip on their shoulder this year, guys.
Well, let me put it to you this way.
They're going to come out trying to prove something, you know.
Bisnavati's coming in as this unheralded sixth-round pick who foams at the mouth like a junkyard dog, okay?
Yes.
DJ Fluker's coming in.
And everything.
Yeah, and DJ Fluker is coming in on a one-year prove-it contract trying to resuscitate his pro career after a very disappointing time with the Chargers. So you have two offensive linemen who've been added to this mix, who have a lot to prove, who have a huge chip on their shoulders, and who will make the competition of this offensive line better. And therefore, at the very least, they will push guys in the starting lineup to be better. So it's a win-win.
And I think the team will make itself better, too, doing what they did last year. I think everybody's going to turn it up a notch, you know.
Well, help make them playoffs. Yep. Eli said that he thought the experience with a lot of these guys of getting to the postseason would help them in this campaign.
Well, because a lot of players on the roster never tasted the postseason before. So once you get that taste, that includes the veterans, correct, who did not have an opportunity. I mean, Brandon Marshall's coming, and he hasn't even tasted the postseason. So how about that?
Brandon Marshall, I want to make this point to you. You know, you talk about guys who really have a hunger and a chip. Brandon Marshall is now going to be this year's Rashad Jennings. Mm-hmm. Rashad Jennings, who just was almost to the verge of tears when he talked about how the Giants had made the playoffs and he had never experienced the playoffs before, been in three different organizations, you know, had come from being, you know, bottom of the heap when he was drafted, to then making the NFL, then being a starter, then becoming a free agent, getting a good deal with the Giants, and he had never made the playoffs before. Last year, he was like a five-year-old in a candy store being given a $1,000 gift certificate because he was finally going to the postseason. Brandon Marshall's going to be the same way if the Giants get to the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let's see what happens, boys.
All right, Nick.
All right.
You got it.
Take care, fellas.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. A lot of motivation across the board, I think it's fair to say, no matter what position a guy is assigned.
What did McAdoo do the first time the Giants reconvened this past spring? He reminded those guys about the miserable taste of the playoff loss in Green Bay.
Well, they should remember that. It's a good way to start off the spring to not have to relive or revisit those feelings. Well, with that being said, that is going to wrap up the program today. We want to thank Jim Zorn again for hopping on the show earlier. If you did miss that interview, it'll be up on the archive later today as he provided some insight on Davis Webb and what it was like working with him leading up to the draft. Big Blue Kickoff Live back up and running tomorrow, noon Eastern, as we will get you set as we inch closer to rookie minicamp, what they expect out of rookie minicamp, some of the things to watch and so forth, because that'll be taking place this weekend. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your day right here on Giants.com.